Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
Hey, it's Fitz, and if you don't know who I am, here's a quick bio. I'm a veteran sports journalist who writes, does TV, radio, and is a longtime podcaster. Also, I have stage 4 prostate cancer, so during the initial stages of the COVID-19 outbreak, my doctors advised me to stay at home. But now, a little more than a year later, I'm fully vaccinated and I've rejoined society. But I'm still continuing this podcast when I'm calling the many friends, athletes, coaches, and colleagues who I've met throughout my 30 years in this industry. Plus, this year, I'm going to be calling some people and making new friends. Oh, and I'm hitting the record button. Welcome to my life and the Life of Fitz podcast. Well, it's time for another edition of The Life of Fitz, and this one, my 40th episode overall of this podcast, is really important. It means a lot to me. When I started this podcast, it was about me calling up my friends during the pandemic and just having meaningful conversations, and we're going to branch out to other people, but this guy was on my list to call because he is one of my all-time favorite Kansas State football players. Maybe because when I left the newspaper business in 1995 to start a magazine for the Wichita Eagle called Purple Pride, this guy was the quarterback. And what happened in that season kind of launched me into this as a career. Because if that season had flopped, the magazine had flopped, nothing in the future would have probably fallen into place like it has. Matt Miller, what a great warrior of a football player. I mean, he just gave everything he had, and that 95 season was so important in the history of Kansas State football as he kind of helped bridge the gap between Chad May and getting to Michael Bishop. We'll get into all the coaching and all of that in this conversation. But as you know, I have stage 4 prostate cancer, and so does Matt. And this is his first public conversation about his cancer, about his serious health battle he is facing. Matt's been living in Pittsburgh, Kansas, but he's getting ready to move to Kansas City. And as we get ready to call him, he's visiting his parents in Tulsa. So as this podcast sets things up, let's call former Kansas State quarterback, former Kansas State baseball player, and former Kansas State coach, my fellow cancer warrior, Matt Miller, in Tulsa, Oklahoma. What's up, buddy?
Hey, how you doing, Fitzy?
I'm good, man. I'm good.
Good.
Wife left town for the day, so...
Oh, there you go.
I'm bashing it with you.
Oh, not bad. There you go, buddy. That's exciting.
Well, we got a lot to cover. A lot of things to talk about. Let's just start with the big stuff. I have come to know that you are... have joined the Prostate Cancer Club. Congratulations.
Yes. Hey, I really appreciate that, Fitzy. It's great to join you on the club, I guess.
We want to have annual meetings, but nobody will have us because we pee everywhere. So,
hey, got a point.
Well, and you've got it not so good, brother. Just catch us up on where you're at.
Yeah, well, I appreciate, everything you've done. You've been a great support for me through this. And, beginning of, beginning of the summer, I started not to feel well. And I was going through a lot of things last summer. And towards the end of it, I started to have some real problems. And I had to get life-flighted from Southeast Kansas to KU Med. And in that process, I had over 40 blood transfusions, and they did my PSA, which I had never heard of, and they did my PSA, and my PSA was 158, and a normal PSA for individuals is 0 to 4.0. So I was in kind of really rough shape and had great doctors there take care of me, you know, get my systems somewhat back to normal. And, you know, we figured out that, you know, I have stage 4 metastatic prostate cancer. So it's, you know, a little bit more, you know, a little bit more, you know, difficult to get through. But, you know, I'm doing my best.
Yeah, you first of all, Matt, how old are you? 47?
49.
49.
I turned 49 a few weeks back, May 1st.
I guess my first question then would be, how the hell did you get 49?
That's a good question.
I don't know what the hell happened.
I wrote down my age the other day, and I was like, holy cow, how is this even possible? But
but you did beat the odds, so to speak. And I mean, doctors don't even say test your PSA until you're 50. And that's why I'm telling guys 45.
Exactly. I'm right there with you.
Because this had to be going on for a little bit. I know the younger you are, the more aggressive prostate cancer can be, but you had some signs in hindsight, just like I did, that you didn't recognize or excuse for other things, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I started to have some just weird problems with bleeding. I had some problems, you know, with kind of pain in my legs. And then just, you know, I had some blood in my urine, you know, things like that started to happen. I didn't know quite what was going on. So that's kind of what got me to the emergency room in the hospital to get checked out. And you're so right. I think 45 and maybe even earlier, because The one thing about prostate cancer, as you said, if you get it at my age, it's not fun. It's extremely, you know, it's extremely aggressive and can cause you a lot of problems very quickly.
Well, let's parse this out. I'm also stage 4, but I'm not metastatic, which is a huge difference. Unfortunately, it's in your bones, correct?
Yes, it is. That's it has metastasized, and that's one of the first places that it can go from the process. So it is outside my prostate, which makes it a more difficult fight, obviously. Right. But I'm a fighter, and nobody's gonna tell me that I don't have a chance at anything in this life, and I'm gonna continue to fight. You know, those 16 goals from Coach Snyder, they always help out, and you know, three of them that I love is, you know, be tough, never give up, and expect to win. You know, I follow every day. And I'm just going to keep fighting. And I got a lot of great people behind me to help me.
Those darn lessons, they apply to so many things. They really do. And you're considering the state and the diagnosis, you're doing okay?
Yeah, I'm doing great. You know, I've been lucky. As I said, I have great people behind me. My parents are still around in their mid-80s, and you know, I'm actually visiting them right now. I'm down in Tulsa visiting them, and they're doing great. And I've just been blessed with three amazing daughters. Mia's 17, Maggie's 15, and then I have a little one, Danny Ray. She just turned 5, and you know, they're beautiful, and they keep me going every day. And then my brothers and sisters, Marty, Mike, and Debbie. My brother Marty has been going on his 20th year as a scout for the Jacksonville Jaguars. And for about the last 15 years, he's been battling Parkinson's disease. So if there's someone that I can look to as a role model, as a hero to get through some rough parts in life, it's definitely my brother Marty. And then there's been a wonderful, you know, group of K-State, K-State people, the football family, obviously, Coach Snyder, Kevin Lockett, you know, guys like that have definitely reached out so many guys have on a daily basis, Mike Eckler. And then my baseball family, you know, I played baseball at K-State, Chris Bouchard, Dave Hendricks, Adam Green have been tremendous. And then there's been a K-State family, the Baskels, out of Wichita. Patty and Leo have done a lot for me. And Leo actually was a baseball pitcher back in the day, a left-hander from Hayes. They called him Leo the Lefty, and he pitched at K-State. So everybody's been definitely, really helpful for me, and I've been blessed to have a great support system.
That's it, man. When you get the diagnosis, I always tell people, You're the general manager of your cancer. You got to pick your coach, which is your doctors, and you got to pick who's on your team, man. And anyone who's not good for the team, you get rid of them.
That's right. Exactly. This is one of those moments. Exactly right. You got to have people that are they're all rowing in the same direction and are positive and are going to help you, keep moving forward in a positive manner.
Well, I'm praying for you, buddy. I know you've got it tough, and you know my phone's always open.
Absolutely, and I appreciate you. The people here might not know all the work you do behind the scenes, and you've been tremendous with me on several phone calls, and I know you're always there for me. And for people going through this, you bringing a lot of attention to the problem. We definitely really appreciate that, and I appreciate all the support you've been giving me.
I'm always good for a pee-pee joke. That was true before prostate cancer, by the way. It's just kind of fallen into my lap.
It's kind of worked out well for you, right?
Well, let's talk about football. Let's lighten this up a little bit, and I appreciate you opening up. But I know you've been kind of a little less open than me, which everyone is.
Yeah. I've kind of kept it. And, Al Jones, obviously, has been, a big K-Stater back, and he's been great for me, too. And, people like that, I've kind of gone about this as a – a little bit quieter in my fight, but I've definitely decided people need to understand this issue, and definitely guys, if I can get people at 45 with yourself to get out there and get tested, and it saves them a lot of the issues that you and I have had to go through, I'm all for that.
Yeah, I started doing accounting very quickly that said, well, when they gave me 6 years, which in terms of what you're going through, seems like a long time. And I was like, well, at least if I can be open and save a guy, if there's someone else out there and I can save one guy, then I won.
There you go.
So football, man. So take me back to how you ended up at Kansas State and why the hell would you pick K-State in the early 90s to transfer to?
That is a great question. I actually, I signed. I was a little bit different than most of the guys that signed with K-State, went to K-State, back in those days. I would have been, probably a 4 or 5-star guy back in the day. I don't know. They didn't have to do stars, but I was on, all those lists. And so I was, I came down out of high school. It was between Michigan State and Texas A&M. And, I had offers all across the country. And I decided to go to Texas A&M. Because my dad had just started up NFL Europe with Tex Schramm in Dallas. And so my folks were going to be in Dallas, and they're very important to me, and I wanted them to watch me play football. And so I decided with Texas A&M, and actually I won the job as a true freshman in spring football. I actually did not play baseball my first spring at A&M to win the job in spring, and I won it. And then I actually got beat out that next fall after – rotate quarterback rotation there, and I eventually lost out. And so when it came time to transfer to Kansas State, it was the next year. So I'd been at A&M for 2 years, and we have a great family friend named Jack Epps. And I don't know if you know Jack, but Jack played in the early 80s, kind of when Dana Dimmel played, and he was out of NEO, and it's been a family friend. He found out I was leaving, and he called Coach Snyder and let him know that Jack's a K-State alum. Jack actually played for the Chiefs for 2 or 3 years as a safety. And so he called Coach Snyder, and I had known Coach Snyder. He was one of the first guys to actually start recruiting me when he was at Iowa, before he even came, when I was a sophomore in high school. So I had known him, and with my dad knows the reputation that Coach Snyder has in the coaching community and had at that time. And so, it's a very traumatic experience to transfer. And Coach Snyder called me 2 or 3 times a day. And K-State was actually in the middle of 2-a-days getting ready for their first game that year. I think it was against New Mexico State or somebody. And he called me every day, and he just made me feel wanted. And at that time, that's what I wanted. And I knew his background. I knew the coaching staff that he had brought. And I believed they were going to turn around Kansas State. So, luckily, I made the decision. And actually, I got to K-State. We had already finished 2-a-days at A&M, and K-State had finished. I got there the day of the first game of the 93 season. And then I was there and got there, and then they had a guy by the name of Chad May, so I realized I was going to have to sit out another year.
Yeah, he wasn't bad.
Yeah, he was pretty good.
But that was interesting, because that was the transformative years for the program because Chad kind of established, along with the players around him, of course, a level of play. And then you came in behind him in 95 and led the program to its first 10-win season. How cool was that season? I mean, it just had to be amazing.
It was awesome. It was, I still think about it, you know, all the time. And, you know, we still have great memories from it. You know, I had, when I was out at Garden City, I had Eric Hickson as my offensive coordinator, and we'd go still talk about the games. And, you know, I just got off the phone with Kevin Lockett the other day talking about a few memories. But it was really a special season. I think just some of the things that happened in that season, too. You know, obviously, you know, a lot of people want to talk to me about the Cincinnati game, and that was a tremendous game, a tremendous finish. Wasn't one of my best games, obviously, but it was a great finish. You know, and then you throw in, we had the KU game when it's the first time that both programs were ranked really high. They were number 6. I believe we were 13, and we go out and smoke them 41-7. You know, the first time I think we, you know, completely dominated Oklahoma. They came in ranked in the top 20. We beat them 49-7. And then just went through all the way to, obviously, the Cotton or the Holiday Bowl. I wish we went to the Cotton Bowl. We should have beat Colorado, but the Holiday Bowl. And I got knocked out, and Cav came in and did a great job and got the MVP. And just, you know, it was just a fantastic season. And you know, I really felt it helped propel Kansas State to many great things afterwards.
Man, so many good memories. In 1995. I had left the Salina Journal. I was sports editor there and started up a magazine for the Wichita Eagle called Purple Pride, and everyone said I was a total idiot for doing it.
pretty good move, buddy.
Yeah, it turned out okay. Yeah. And here I am sitting in Cincinnati watching K-State stink against the Bearcats. It was a horrible game, as you well know.
Oh, yeah.
And then that last play, and I saw it develop, you know, from the press box, kind of in slow motion. What are your memories of that last throw to Kevin Lockett and how it just kind of opened
up? Well, you know, the thing that's funny about that game is, I get people, you know, talk to me about the four interceptions and everything. My first two dropbacks of that game, I got sacked and the ball flipped up in the air. And it was one of those where the D lineman fair catch a ball that's in the air. So my first two interceptions of that day, of that game were, sacks and the ball flips in the air and a D lineman catches it. So I don't call those interceptions as a quarterback, but I guess they were that, you know, they went down in the books as, so I got to take them. And then, you know, on one of those, I had a severe third degree separation, my left shoulder, my throwing shoulder, or my non-throwing shoulder. You know, the next morning I woke up and my entire shoulder was black. And I had so much internal bleeding from it that it drained all the way down to my toes, which were yellow. So it just went from black all the way to my toes that were yellow the next day. And so I can still remember at halftime warming up, and I couldn't throw a football. And Tyson Schweiger going to Cavs saying, "Get ready." And I was like, "No way, after that first half performance, am I going to let that speak for what I can do?" So I went out there, and, we played pretty well in the second half. And, you know, what I can remember on the last drive is I can remember, first of all, I can remember Derek King on the kickoff. They did a squib kick, and he caught it and gave us, you know, really good field position. And people don't realize that was very key with the time that was left. And then we drove down, and then we got down to the last play. And it's a play we actually ran quite a bit. Actually a called play, trips left, dash left, throwback, X post flag. And so what I do is I get the snap, and I tried to, I wanted them to think that we were doing a Hail Mary to the left. So I gave it kind of a pump to the three receivers on the left side. And while I was doing that, Kevin, just how great he was at route running, ran just an incredible post flag. When I turned around, I just saw a huge area of open field right by the pylon, and I knew if I could get it there, Kevin was going to get it. And luckily it got there. It was a kind of a tough throw. There was a lot of air on it, but it got there, and Kevin caught it, and he actually scored right away, ran out, and then ran back in. It was really cool. So, what a great memory for sure.
Yeah, it reminds me of a longer version of the play that Coach Snyder called in 1989 to beat North Texas.
With Paul Watson to Frank.
With Carl Straw to Frank. Yep.
Carl Straw to Frank. Okay.
Yep. Yeah, it was. Your throw was a hell of a lot longer, though. That was. I remember long it took for the ball to get there, but Kevin just ran a perfect throw.
The coaches all gave me crap. Mark Mangino gives me crap to this day. It's just like you could have timed that with a wind dial, but it got there. It got there for sure.
Your concussions, man. I didn't until I was doing some homework catching up. I knew you had some, but back in 1995, we didn't mark them as so severe. And your Holiday Bowl one really took you out. But how many did you have in your career?
I've had quite a bit. I was talking with my dad the other day. You know, the day I started playing football, I think I had, I'm in the teens of concussions.
My God.
And I've actually been, in that season, I was blacked out of two games. Missouri, there was a play on the sideline in the third or fourth quarter, DeMonte Cross, got a penalty. I got blacked out there. I got knocked out. And then KU, I got knocked out a little bit. I had two or three that season, but they weren't, again, you got your bell rung back in the day. So that's kind of how it went. But I definitely took a few shots, and I wasn't always the smartest. I needed to learn to get down, but it was, nothing was going to hold me off the field though that year for sure.
Yeah, it's remarkable how we've matured and grown in knowledge with CTE and everything.
Absolutely. And it's important that guys, it's important to follow that, because you can definitely have some problems as you get older with headaches and stuff.
Yep. How long ago did you know you wanted to get into coaching? Because you kind of transitioned immediately into it.
I tell you the truth, I didn't. It's not something I grew up thinking maybe NFL scouting, that type of thing. And then right after I got done playing, Coach asked me to, stay on the staff and help out. And then I think I really caught the bug in 1997 as I was a student, I think it was my last year as a student assistant. Or actually, it was my first year. I think I got the GA job. And I really got to work real closely with Michael Bishop his first year. And I kind of got the bug going. Obviously, we were really successful, and Coach saw that I had some talent doing it, and it just kind of went off from there.
Yeah, not a bad student to have, Michael.
No, it was great. It was great. We had a lot of fun. I would go pick him up before his classes. We'd go up and get on the board, and I tell you what, people don't realize how hard the work that Michael Bishop put in there, because I think his 97 year is about as amazing as the 98 year, because he got there at the end of summer, so he didn't know the offense, and we were learning and teaching on the go, and people don't realize how hard that is as a quarterback. And Michael, he was really smart and helped me, he picked things up, real easily. And then we were able to take off and go from there.
It amazes me looking back at the history of Coach Snyder and how he handled people. For a guy to not know what he's doing, and Coach Snyder puts him in the starting lineup, and Coach Snyder puts him in at quarterback, says everything you want to know about Michael Bishop, how special he was.
Oh, he was exactly. And it was, just from the leadership perspective, it just brought he brought so much to it. And, players love playing for him. Coaches love coaching him. And, he was as tough as they come, as talented as they come. And, it was one of the true blessings of my coaching career to be a part of Michael's development.
Hey, it's Fitz. Let's hit the pause button right here and take a little break.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot here. I think we all know how Michael Bishop and what Coach Snyder did with him changed college football, changed football with the Wildcat formation and all that. But do you feel like you were the guy that kind of showed Coach Snyder that the dual threat really could be effective at this level?
That's you know Chuck Culver always tells me that, and some of the older coaches say that I was finally the one that helped Coach Snyder show people that it could be done. You know, I think he had guys like Smart Gesso and guys in the past that had attempted it, but there was either their passing was lacking or, you know, didn't quite have the running ability. And, I think I was the first one to show that the actual dual threat, was definitely a big time thing to have with your offense. And, I think it definitely helped Coach realize that, you know, this was something that he wanted to keep doing. And obviously, you know, Michael just took it from there and exponentially expanded on it.
It's an amazing time frame to watch what Coach Snyder did, going from essentially running the spread. I mean, it wasn't called that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You guys were running five wides with you and May and Kavanaugh quite often when nobody else was doing that, to all of a sudden going to this dual threat thing. And then you're going into coaching, having to adjust to these changes too. How traumatic or how difficult was that?
You know, it was definitely, there was a learning curve to it, but with Coach Snyder, he has a plan and, you know, he just didn't throw everything at us all at once. You know, he piecemealed it for the coaches, piecemealed it for the players. And, we definitely took our time and we learned, went through a few growing pains, obviously, but, he's such a great teacher. It wasn't really that difficult to pick up once we got going, but it definitely changed the face of college football.
Yeah, it did. Well, what are your memories of that 97 season? I, of course, jump immediately to the Fiesta Bowl and what happened there.
Yeah, but
there has to be some moments during the course of the season when you knew something incredible was happening.
Well, you know, I can still remember going to this. You know, as people don't realize, the first game of that year, Kansas State actually went to Northern Illinois to play. And so we had a road game at UNI. And, I think Michael took one of the first scrambles and just bolted up the right sideline for a, 60-yard touchdown. And I remember I can remember looking at Mark Cimino on the sideline, and we kind of looked like, we might have something different here. And, just kind of expanded from there. But, I think it was just watching Michael Bishop and, his growth each week. And, all those guys' growth each week, the Darnell McDonald's, all those junior college guys that came in, just watching how fast – they picked up the system, and all the hard working by Coach Hudd and Coach Pete and myself and Smitty and everybody, getting these guys going. And, it was just a great group of kids to coach and a great group of guys to coach with. Just a fun time.
Do you ever look back and kind of pinch yourself what part of Kansas State football history you were a significant part of?
Oh, absolutely. I consider myself the luckiest cat out there. I was able to, come in. I look at it, because I can still remember In 1992, K-State played on ESPN on a Thursday night against Iowa State, and it was rainy. And it was just awful. And I can remember going to a pizza place on a Thursday night with my teammates from Texas A&M, and we were like, man, can you imagine if you had to play there? and then the next year, I was at K-State. But everything had already, I didn't realize the changes that were going on when I was eating pizza and watching that game. I was just so lucky to get there in the time that I got there. You know, I'm just thinking of the coaches, the Bobby Stoops, the Ron Hudsons, Dana Dimmel, you know, Mike Stoops, you know, Mark Mangino. You know, just think of the guys that were assistants on the staff when I was able to get there and learn from as a player, but also learn from as a coach.
Right.
And then just to go through and, you know, I was able to see, you know, and the way Coach Snyder, the way, you know, I think what was so cool was, you know, we took baby steps. We weren't a team that we just showed up and we were great one season. People saw that we did it the right way, and just an amazing time. And to be a part of it is just, they call it the decade of domination. And it really was. It was a lot of fun.
And your season kind of gets lost in K-State history.
Yeah.
I mean, you were second team all Big Eight.
Yeah.
You threw 22 touchdowns. You completed what, like 65% of your passes, 63?
Yeah, I was either one or two in every statistical single season category in Big Eight history. It's not too bad.
Not bad at all.
You know, we finished number six in the nation, which is still tied with the highest final ranking of a Kansas State team ever. You know, we're still, you know, and we're first one to win 10 games. We had, you know, when Eric Hickson went over top with 1 minute left against Colorado, you couldn't have told me we weren't going to be 11 when, have 11 victories. We were that close. They went 80 yards on the number one defense in the nation and, beat us there at the last game at home, Colorado, or we would have finished 11-1. And the team that we lost to, that one loss, was, some people say, the best team in college football history, Nebraska, yeah. 95. So it was a fantastic year. And, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, really, really, really started getting into the program with Michael Bishop in the 98 years, 97, 98. And so I do think the 95 season kind of gets lost. But, you know, it was one hell of a football team. It really was.
Yeah, those early years were just incredible. Everything was so new, you know, the Copper Bowl and then the Aloha Bowl, which not many fans could.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I think that was an important part for K-State to understand how important the fans are to the program.
Absolutely.
And they went to Hawaii and so few people could go. But I remember that whole Holiday Bowl so well. It was just such an amazing experience because back then the Holiday Bowl, I think, was the third Big Eight Bowl. I mean, it was a big
deal. Yeah, it was a big time. It was a big deal to go there to the Holiday Bowl back then. And so it was awesome.
And then we found out that was actually Coach Snyder's favorite bowl. He would go there whenever possible.
Absolutely. I mean, that's my hometown, San Diego.
I know.
You can't beat it either. It was fantastic.
I know. I always thought Coach would retire there, and I was completely wrong. He chose Manhattan, Kansas over San Diego.
He did. Hey, God's country, right?
Yeah, I guess. I guess. Take us through your coaching career a little bit. When did you get on the staff full-time?
Got on the staff full-time right after Michael got finished in 99. And then I was with Coach Snyder until he retired the first time. And then we all, you know, kind of went on. Some guys stayed in coaching. I've had medical problems, you know, before. I've you know, this cancer has, you know, attacked me now, but I have Crohn's disease too. And there was a year in 2001 that I had, several feet of my, my small intestine taken out because of diverticulitis. And, I was close. I was in bad shape that season in 2001. So I got through the season. And then after that, I got, I had to have a major surgery. And then that last season started having some problems. So I took some time off and went into private business. Did some advertising and some work like that after Coach and I retired the first time to get my health back. And then when I felt I was doing better, Jeff Kelly was at Garden City and called and said they needed an offensive coordinator right before season started. So I was like, well, I'll give it one last try. And it was kind of cool. I went out there Started coaching at Garden City, and within a year, I was named head coach. We had great offense with Nick Marshall, who went to Auburn and almost won a national title at Auburn. He was my quarterback, and my receiver was Tyreek Hill. Or my running back. He was actually our running back back then. So there was some pretty good talent out of Garden City. So went and, you know, I coached out there for a few years. So that was a lot of fun. And then since then, actually, I've been doing private quarterback lessons.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
And you're in Pittsburgh, Kansas, correct?
And I'm actually getting ready to move up to Kansas City for some medical things. So, I'm getting ready to move up to Kansas City and really excited about that. There's a lot of great K-State friends and teammates up there. So looking forward to that move.
That's good. You'll be a little more accessible to me. I don't mind driving to Pittsburgh. It just takes a lot of effort.
Yeah, absolutely. It does. A lot of guys don't get through. K-Log does some when he's heading to Tulsa, but not too many guys get through there.
How special is Kevin Lockett? I mean, first as a player, but now we've seen him. He's just an amazing guy, isn't he?
He really is. He's salt of the earth. And, I was thinking about some of the questions you might be asking me. And I was just thinking about the K-State days. And, you know, I truly think that Kevin's the most important recruit Kansas State's ever got. Just from his leadership, mm-hmm. from everything that he did. And then he's, you know, the family's the gift that keeps on giving, right?
Yeah.
You know, you get the brother next. And then you get, you know, his son, who was just amazing. And all the things that he's doing in his life. I mean, what a blessing, Tyler is. So it's, he's just an amazing person, was an amazing talent. And again, I think he's the most important football player in Kansas State history.
That's a really, really good point. And he's my favorite player. And you played with him, but I found myself sitting in the press box going, holy shit, how did he make that catch? Every game.
Oh, yeah.
Every game. It wasn't like a couple times a season. Every game you had one of those. What did he just do?
Yeah, he did. He's one of those that, you know, that they call him 50-50 balls, but with him, they were pretty much, you know, I considered him almost to be about 90-10. You know, he was going to get it. So it was, he was definitely a lot of fun to throw to. Great ball skills, great leaping ability, and great athleticism.
Do you think K-State would be out of line if we petitioned Tyler Lockett to start having children? Do you think that's none of our business?
He needs to.
Come on. We're going to have a gap here. Your dad's running out. The twins are getting old. Kevin's just amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah. Kevin's got one coming up, and he's got the twins right behind him. So
yep.
It should be exciting.
It's absolutely incredible. And after you ran into some issues in life, and we all do. I don't know if you want to talk about this, but you had some substance abuse, alcohol, and I now wonder if it's not part of your CTE.
Yeah, it was, you know, I've, you know, definitely it's something that I've been proud to overcome. I've gotten alcohol out of my life, and it definitely caused a couple problems, like, you know, some young people get unfortunately it does happen. And, you know, I got through those problems, and, you know, I think one time I talked to you, I said, man, I'm going on 2 years without drinking and I get cancer. So it's, you know, something that, I definitely got through. Something that made me stronger as a human.
Well, it's interesting because, you would not have been able to handle the cancer if you were still drinking.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
And I don't know if you're spiritual. I'm more spiritual than religious. And I kind of feel like the Lord clears the path because he knows you've got a giant hurdle coming. And
absolutely. That's a good point. That's a really good point. I agree with that there for sure.
Yeah. And I just feel like when mine came, it was a time when I could deal with it. I'd been through other things, and I just feel like it was, okay, now you're going to have to deal with this and do something with it. And I really do appreciate you kind of talking about these things because it's important. It's important.
Yeah, absolutely it is. You are so right. I think there's definitely a time in my life that when I was going through, you know, a few problems in my life that definitely I don't think that, you know, the good Lord probably knew that at that point I was not ready to handle this cancer fight. And you're definitely, I'm definitely, he's prepared me for, you know, some of those things I went through have definitely, you know, helped me get through this fight and get through bad days. Definitely.
Crohn's is fun though, isn't it? That's fun.
Oh, yeah, it's a joy. It's
oh,
a joy.
God, that stuff's miserable. I'm so glad. I've had bowel problems, but, man, not that. Not
no,
that.
No, yeah, it wasn't. Crohn's is not fun, and it's, you know, again, it's just something that the good Lord's put on my plate that I've got to get through. But, you know, with his strength and with the strength of people like you and my family and friends, I'm able to fight it.
Yeah. I had a rare form of Graves' disease. They couldn't figure out how to treat it because it was non-thyroid, which is Graves is typically, you know, set off by hyperthyroid.
Yeah.
And it took them forever to diagnose it. I had to go to KU Med, KUI to get it diagnosed. And, if I hadn't got it treated properly, I would have gone blind. And
oh man!
And in hindsight, I'm thinking, I feel like I had to go through that to be willing and able for this fight.
I think that's that's a great way to look at it. Really, I really do. And again, I feel the same way with some of the things I've done. I've had to go through.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, now I'm going to really put you on the spot. Does Matt Miller regret not being a full-time baseball player? Because, dude, you're really good.
At times in my life I do, especially, you know, with, I think, some of the issues with probably CTE in my back, and I just tried to get up from a chair and it's really difficult because my pain in my back and stuff. But I definitely do have thoughts. What could have happened if I just went to college and played baseball? You know, I mean, what's funny is my best year at K-State, my sophomore year, I finished third in the Big Eight in hitting. I batted over 380 and, you know, Big Eight play and led the team in hitting that season, had, you know, four home runs, three in one series at Iowa State. And, you know, I just, had a lot of success on the baseball field at K-State. And, you know, I do think about, you know, if potentially that would have been, you know, if I would just gone baseball, what would have happened? But again, you know, I still like my story. I think it's unique. And, yep, you know, not a lot of guys can say they were all conference in two sports.
It's really cool. Really cool. Now, did you play for Mike Clark?
Yeah, Mike Clark was amazing. Mike Clark is, you know, I think he, you know, what he had to go through as a head coach, you know, they didn't give us, we had, back in the day, we had no money at the baseball program, and Coach Clark put together teams that, you know, we were definitely competitive. And I don't know how he did it, because, you know, during games, you know, if we had to use the restroom, we waited in line in the porta potty, you know, we had to get behind a kid with a Laffy Taffy and a parent, say, hey, excuse me, I'm on deck. Can I cut in front of you here at the porta potty? And, you know, my locker was the hatchback of my Ford Escort. So it was, it was a different day in K-State baseball. So I see the complex today, and I see the locker room, and I'm just amazed at what they're doing. And I think it's great, but people don't realize they didn't give Mike Clark anything to work with when he was there. And he really put some competitive teams out there, which I thought was amazing.
Those stories are some of the most amazing, because it sounds like you're telling a story from 1950.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Mike Clark tells the story of actually having runners on base and having to leave the third base box to go stand in line because he needed to go so badly. And he's sending in signals from the third, from the porta potty line.
Yeah, from the porta potty. Yeah, from the line of the porta potty. He's got a coach or a player there.
Just amazing.
Yeah, getting the signals from him and putting them to us on the field. Yeah, yeah. It really was. I mean, when you talk about they gave no money to the program, there was zero money.
None. I mean, as a fan, you didn't want to show up too early because you might, the parking lot was the locker room, and you might see a naked player.
Exactly. You gotta be careful what you see there.
It's just incredible. Absolutely incredible. Yeah, I kind of look at your career and wonder, you know, what were you then as a baseball player?
I had offers from the big time programs out in California, the Long Beach States, the Cal State Fullertons. You know, I had big time offers just to go play baseball, but I let everybody know I was definitely going to play football too. So
Now, you coach tight ends, right, for the most part?
Yes, yes. I coached my first guy I coached was Shad Meyer.
He turned out okay.
And, yeah, with third-round draft pick. And he was fantastic to coach. And, you know, I was lucky. I had a great group of them through there, Thomas Hill, Brian Casey, you know, guys like that. They were definitely all Brian Lamone, Nick Warren, a lot of great kids, a lot of fun kids to coach.
That was back when Coach valued tight ends more than he did in 2.0. I feel like that's one of the things he lost in his retirement was how to access the tight end. I don't think he...
Yeah, and even when I was coaching him, we didn't go to him near enough.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Shad Meyer is one of the least, taken advantage of, prospects. You know, we did not get the ball to Shad Meyer near enough as we could have. He could have been, kind of a Gronk type. You know, he was so big, so fast, so athletic. He would have been, he could have given a lot. He could have done a lot more, on the field. But it was just kind of, we kind of got away to throwing from the tight ends. But when you got those great guys, the Darnell McDonalds, Aaron Lockett, you got those guys outside. Sometimes there are not enough footballs to go around, and that's kind of an issue I think we may have got into with our tight ends.
Absolutely incredible the number of weapons that K-State had back in that day. And as good as the offense was, it was really Stoops and Leavitt and the guys that followed that built an incredible defense that made K-State so competitive in every game.
Oh, absolutely. And that's, our defense, that's what's so amazing, just being able to play with, a defense, that was always going to give you a chance to win every day and every game. And with, as an offense and as a quarterback, as a coach, that's all you can ask for. And, they were truly amazing. I think people don't realize, the 95 team, our defense finished number one in the nation in total defense and on scoring defense, and our offense was number four in scoring offense. So we had the number one defense and number four offense in the nation. So that's pretty good.
Not bad. Not bad at all.
Yeah.
Too bad you didn't see the end of the season. How about a shape were you at in the Holiday Bowl?
How bad a shape was I in?
Yeah, after you got rocked.
My first memories were when I was in the emergency room in my room in the hospital in San Diego. I spent the night in the hospital for observation. But the game was over, and I got a call from Coach Snyder. Cav got on the phone, and then Coach Hudson got on the phone. And that's kind of when my memory starts to come back.
Yeah, that's just that whole bowl game. It's one of my best K-State memories. Not because you got hurt, but everything that happened in that game.
It was a fun one.
And Cav's in the damn game. Holiday Bowl Hall of Fame.
He is. Good for Cav.
It's crazy.
Fantastic. And, Cav and I always laugh at that one because we were in the Cav was my roommate. And the night before the game, I promised him because he was worried. Because I don't know if you remember that was back in the Cody Lee Smith. Is he going to be healthy to come play for K-State or not? And and Cav was really worried about Cody Lee being there for spring ball, and he wanted to get out and have a little bit more film to give him the upper edge on Cody Lee. And I think I definitely got him out there, got him some good film, right?
That was so nice of you.
Exactly. It was all for Cav.
Well, buddy, I love you, man. I hope you're just keep on. I know you will. Keep on fighting. Yeah. Keep on fighting.
You got it, buddy. And Fitz, again, I want to thank you so much for the leadership you're showing in this prostate fight. And I appreciate you always being there for me.
Okay. Well, I'll be coming to Kansas City sometime this summer. And we are going to go have a fresca or something.
You got it, my friend. Sounds good.
Okay, brother. Love you. Take care of yourself.
Take care. Love you. Okay. Take care. Email.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye.
Matt has been very private about his cancer battle. So when I texted him, and we've been in touch quite a bit, I was really happy that he said, yeah, it's time. Let's do it. Let's talk about it. And he was very open about it. There were some topics that we didn't really get into. But I'm telling you, folks, Matt's deep in the battle. I don't know how else to put it. He's deep in this battle. And he's winning right now. But, boy, he's got it bad. It's not a good situation. And I love him like a brother. It's been an interesting way to bond with someone. Guys, for God's sakes, get your PSA scored. Matt was 47 when he first saw symptoms. If you're 45 or older, get your PSA scored. If you listen to this podcast, that should be all I need to say. Get to your damn doctor and score your PSA. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'll talk to you real soon.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.